He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Nau mai, whakaronga mai ki te Aotai Whenua. Welcome to Country Life. I'm Sally Round.
And I'm Duncan Smith. Manawatea a Matariki.
Today we're visiting Ngāti Manawa country in Bay of Plenty, where a rural tourism business has had to be inventive to stay afloat during the COVID-19 pandemic.
We catch up with our Taumarunui student, who started study in Hamilton at the start of the year. In February, she was homesick and wanted to leave. How's she going now? A Murapara local is helping tuna, eels, on their migratory trip to the ocean. Two power stations on the Rangitaiki River block their way.
And later we're in Hawke's Bay, finding out how a hemp food producer is going from paddock to plate and healing Māori land in the process.
When I first walked this whenua and we were walking across it, literally the wind was blowing dust off it. It was blowing the topsoil off. And honestly, I likened myself to how Neil Armstrong felt when he was walking on the moon. It was just flipping dust.
That's later, but first to our look at conditions on the land this week. The cold hit with a vengeance in Northland. Our contact says there was a slight frost on Wednesday, but it's very, very wet, and he's having to stand stock off paddocks and feed out silage to save pasture. The damp will be trying for those without much in the way of reserves to feed out. Around Pukekohe, it's been wet, and growers have struggled with outdoor lettuce crops.
Waikato is very cold and getting some good winter frosts, which is slowing down pasture growth. With their herds dried off, seasonal supply dairy farmers are doing winter maintenance, things like fixing races. Cow conditions just average heading into the new season because of the earlier drought, which is now well and truly broken. A Bay of Plenty farmer had to put his winter woolies on this week. He says a couple of frosts and some sun have been welcomed as things are starting to dry out. He's been chipping away at riparian planting around waterways and says some dairy farmers are quite buoyant despite rising input costs eating into profit. They're wanting to pay back debt, but some are finding it difficult to meet bank targets and are paying back at a reduced rate.
King Country's had a run of hard frosts down to -4 degrees, but our contact says most aren't concerned. The frosts clean up the bugs. They would normally have had a few more by this time of year, and it's the warmest winter he's ever known. Pastures are still struggling after the dry autumn. A consultant says it'll catch up on farmers come lambing and calving from September if they haven't made decisions on things like fertiliser before then. A farmer on the east coast has just finished pregnancy scanning ewes. Rates have been exceptional, 210 to 215% at the top end. Other farms are still in full swing with their scanning. Some of the very early flocks are starting to lamb. Getting cattle killed is still a problem. They might be all booked into the works and then delayed for up to 2 weeks. It's frustrating, although its good prices are holding up. It's been wet and cold here too. Hawke's Bay orchardists have welcomed the winter chill this week, needed for bud break in the spring. Minds are focusing now on the future, and whether all blocks have a sustainable one given ongoing challenges. Decisions will be being made now on what needs to stay and what could go. Pruning is well underway.
A Manawatū farmer says it's been challenging, to say the least, with all the rain this month. Slips, high creeks and lots of water lying around. He was pleased to see the sun when we called. A dairy farmer in Horo Whenua says winter milking is going well, and the premium for the milk offsets the extra costs of milking year-round. On other dairy farms, artificial insemination is getting underway. The dry week has been a boost for farmers and market gardeners who are in the middle of planting strawberries and harvesting broccoli. After some amazing autumnal growth in Wairarapa, our contact says some of his better paddocks are still growing 12 to 14 kilograms of dry matter per hectare. Taking down and putting up breaks is a daily chore on most stock farms. Sheep scanning is in full swing and good results are coming out across the region.
Kita Waipounamu across Cook Strait. Chilly mornings in the Nelson region have been great for pruning, but an orchardist near Richmond says it's been tough on the hands despite wearing gloves. He's pruning a pear block this week and training up new staff. Finding reliable younger staff is the biggest issue he has this winter. Older retirement age people have put their hands up to work, but he's not that keen on sending them up to the top trees on ladders. In other larger apple orchards, he says people have started preparing the ground for new varieties. Wiener calves and prime steers had a long journey this week from a farm at the top of the Marlborough Sounds. The road's still not safe after flooding and slips last July, so two truck and trailer units had to be barged in to the Keniparu Sounds and then driven to Titirangi Bay to pick up the cattle. It was 1:30 in the morning before they were unloaded for an overnight stop at cattle yards in the Sounds. The local farmer had waited up for them and prepared a meal for the exhausted drivers. That morning, the cattle were loaded up again to meet the barge to Havelock and then on to Canterbury by road. What a mission.
A farmer near Fox Glacier on the west coast says a week of hard frosts have dried the ground out after a heap of rain earlier in the month. He's been busy feeding out and moving break fences where cows are on turnips. He says there's a lot of snow on the mountains behind the farm, but none has yet fallen on the flats. After a fair amount of rain last week in North Canterbury, this week's icy mornings and sunny days have been welcomed by all. U-scanning results are coming in and dry rates are quite high in the region, up to 20% on some farms. A good result would be under 5%. A Pyramid Valley farmer reckons it could be due to a lot of dead matter found in longer pastures that the sheep were eating. Apart from that, winter farming is going well with sheep happy eating fodder beet and running on the hill blocks that need to be eaten down.
In Otago, a Tairi Plains dairy farmer says frost-hardened paddocks have made it easy to feed out. This week he's also been doing maintenance work and has vaccinated the cows for leptospirosis, a disease caused by bacteria that can cause mastitis and a drop in milk production, and pink eye, which if not treated can result in temporary or permanent blindness. Over the winter, his herd are on a diet of grass and baleage. He no longer grows winter crops as a consent is required. He says he's also looking at reducing cow numbers to meet emissions obligations. Everyone's fully into winter mode in Southland. Cows on dairy farms have settled on winter crops while sheep are break feeding on grass and getting a top up of sheep nuts or oats. A lot of baleage, straw and hay is being fed out too. Apart from on dairy runoff properties, it's a quiet time, so people have been fixing fences and repairing laneways. Our contact says the biggest issue for dairy farmers at the moment is uncertainty around the draft code of welfare for dairy cattle. She says consultation fatigue is really starting to affect people's well-being.
You're listening to Country Life on RNZ National, 101 FM.
Now on Country Life, we're off to Ngāti Manawa country, to a spot on the shores of Lake Anawhenua in Bay of Plenty.
Kia ora!
Kia ora! Woohoo!
That's what I'm talking about. How was the tour today, guys?
Really good.
This was 4 years ago when Country Life was at Kohotapu Lodge near Murupara, just as the Stray Bus Company deposited 32 international backpackers for an overnight stay. Nadine and Carl Toitoi had a vision for their rural tourism business.
It is just five words: change a town through tourism.
They were also providing school uniforms and taking classes of rangatahi on trips around the Motu. So how on earth have they survived when for two of the past 4 years there have been no stray buses rolling in?
We were doing really well 4 years ago, and pre-COVID we had just won a New Zealand Tourism Award for community engagement. We're about to launch a brand new product, Whirinaki Forest Footsteps, which is guided cultural walking tours in our ngahere, and we were halfway through building a brand new five-bedroom self-contained house for more beds because it was going that well.
And
then COVID struck and we literally lost everything overnight. So obviously our business was 98% reliant on the international market, being a cultural tourism product in New Zealand. So it was a really tough time going from the crest of a wave to rock bottom. It took a lot of strength and character to get back up on our feet. There were a lot of tears and just the feeling of exasperation and And so, that point in your life, you really have two choices. One is to give up and walk away, and the other one is to keep fighting and keep trying. And we were lucky enough to be selected for STAP funding through the government. So we were identified as a strategic tourism asset, and we received some grant funding from the government to help us get through. And we also knew that COVID at that stage was going to go on for more than 6 to 12 months, and that funding was not enough to carry us through. So we dug deep again, and we were lucky enough to secure He Potama Rangatahi funding to run 12-week life skills courses out here at Kohutapu Lodge for NEETs Rangatahi, so between the ages of 16 to 24 who are not in school, education or training, and we have 12 weeks to basically get them back on their feet, pop them up the other end, and hopefully going forward in life and doing something wonderful. So you can probably hear them in the background here. We've just started 1 week down, and we're running another 12-week program now, and it's going really well.
What do they do, and where have the kids come from physically in the country? Got the age?
So the kids are all from within the Matatua Rohe, so from Ruatuki all the way through to Ruatauna. We've got kids from Kaingaro, Murupara, Waioho, Whakatane, Te Tiko, Kawero. Yeah, and they all come out here to Kohutapu Lodge from Monday to Friday, and our course is designed to give them licences, CV, get their birth certificates, bank accounts, all of that sort of stuff. But more importantly for us, it's reconnecting them to who they are, where they're from, and making them proud about being Māori and getting them back up on their feet and able to take the world on, head on.
And how many courses have you had
so
far?
We've run two so far. This is our third one. And, yeah, so throughout the three courses, we've had a total of 60 rangatahi that we've brought in. And the beautiful thing about it is we've been able to repurpose our lodge and our facilities here while we still wait for those international borders to open. We've re-engaged all of our staff who are our kaiako or the tutors who deliver the program. So, we've had a lot of our rangatahi go on to work, full-time work, further training, even some that have gone back to school in order to get their NCA levels so they can get to where they want to be.
And when tourists do come back, will you branch back into that arm as well?
100%, yes. We've always got plans to welcome our international visitors back, and we'd love to be able to continue to do our mahi or our work within this rangatahi space as well, because it is so successful. So, maybe in the winter months we might be able to run another course, and then in the summer months welcome our tourists back, because obviously tourism is quite seasonal as well.
And have you heard from Stray Bus? Was the one that I was following around, the big orange bus.
They're coming back.
They still exist.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of our suppliers in the market are very loyal, which we're thankful for. They're looking at coming back when those borders open, and we've got some forward bookings. So it's looking exciting, really. There's a catch cry in the tourism industry now, and it's called regenerative tourism. So it's all about looking at ways you can give back to communities and stuff, and we have been looked at as a bit of a leader in that space, and a lot of people have approached us to talk about it, and for us it's a bit awkward because we're just doing what we naturally do. So hopefully, there'll be definitely a different style of tourism going forward for the entire country, and it will be a lot around giving back to not just the environment but to the communities that the tourism products operate within as well.
I think they want you to keep talking so they don't have to come in for lessons.
No, we're about to go in and do a lesson on growth mindset now. So teaching our rangatahi that positive self-talk and the way we look at life and what we tell ourselves really does impact on how we look at the world, and that anything is possible once you start telling yourself you can do it instead of you can't do it.
Wairere!
And so Wairere was on our last course, and she's just back for a visit today because she's actually completed all her goals she set out for herself. But I'll let her tell you a little bit about that.
Yeah. So what brought you onto the course when you did do it?
Because I was at a time, like a place where I didn't know what I wanted in life, and I didn't know what career I wanted to take. So my sister actually suggested for me to come onto a course.
And you came, and how did you feel coming onto the course?
At the start, I was really antisocial. I had social anxiety, so I didn't really talk to anyone. But when the time passed, we all actually eventually came as one group.
And what were some of the really big lessons for you? Belief in yourself? Like, did that change?
Motivation.
Yeah.
Determination, and actually get to know ourselves.
And how surprised were you that they could teach you that in just 12
really
weeks?
I was really surprised. I wasn't expecting myself to actually knock out all my goals between a term. So, yeah, that's what I was really surprised about myself.
Good on you. And what were those goals?
To go back to school, because I had left school because I wasn't really doing good in school. I was playing up and everything. So I actually dropped out early to come attend course. And my goals were to go back to school after our course and get my level twos, and I accomplished that in one term.
And now what's the future holding for you?
Get mahi for now, to get up and get some money, and then hopefully start my apprenticeship next year for carpentry.
Wow, and where will you get the mahi?
Either Toihumwai, Whaktane or Rotorua. Mm-hmm. Yes, or I'll go under my uncle who's a carpenter as well, who suggested to do my apprenticeship as soon as I can.
What sort of carpentry will it be? House building?
House building. Yes, house building.
And what drove you to that?
I actually started doing wood through school and I actually enjoyed it. And my dad told me that it actually would help out our family a lot because we have a section of land that has nothing on it. So I thought to get it and be a carpenter and get something built for my family on our land. Yeah, just for our family, 8 of us. Just, yeah, a big house for all of us.
All the best for your carpentry then.
Thank you.
Now in March, we met Rain Bradley. She'd moved from the small King Country town of Tomaranui to Hamilton. She was at the School of Tourism and was a little bit worried about being left in the big smoke by her parents. Rain had never stayed away from family before, and here she was in a hostel.
On Monday morning, I was not good. I was ready to chuck it all in and go home. I was crying all night. I wanted to go home. I was telling Mum, Mum, can you come pick me up, please? And she wouldn't pick me up. No one would.
Things improved. She started enjoying the classes and the whole environment felt a bit more comfortable. Back in March, she was telling us she could see herself completing the year and going on to next year. So we thought we'd pop back and see how things are as the second semester's starting.
Since I got over my homesickness, I've actually opened up more and I've started to do things more. I go out more with my friends and I've built more of a connection with my friends. So, like, we plan stuff, like, to go to each other's hometowns. So that's good. I feel like living in Hamilton, now I can actually go away to other towns and stay somewhere else instead of, you know, going back home. But, yeah, I think just getting over my homesickness has just made living here better. Like, I don't look at it as, Hamilton.
And how about the course? How's that going?
The course is good. We got some new people in our class. That's good. It is a bit harder, but, well.
A lot more work, is it?
Yeah, way more work. But the deadlines are bigger, so we have longer to work on the assessments and stuff, but there's still lots of work, lots and lots, and there's lots of reading, and I hate reading with a passion. So that's not good, but nah, it's all right.
And you do
I love school. Yeah.
And you're getting good marks?
Yep, so far. Yeah, I love school.
Have they sent you on any educational trips? Have you been anywhere?
Well, not really, but we have had some, like, what's it called? Volunteering.
Yes.
Go to that. But, yeah, we have a Matariki one coming up.
What's that we're volunteering for?
I'm not too sure, but it's on TV. And we have to look really nice and we have to wear makeup. I don't want to wear makeup. But, yeah. I don't think we'll be on TV, but, like, maybe get a
They'll be filming
of us.
Something yeah. you're doing?
The event's getting filmed, yeah.
Right. And you have been top of the class, were you, one time?
Not really. Oh, I got student of the month. But that's all. I got that on our first month of school.
And what got you that?
I think it was my attitude and something about my personality. Yeah.
And are you surprised how well you've slotted in now?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, and I love my friends.
And next year? You looking ahead?
Yeah, may as well do level 6. I think I'm going to do level 6. And that just goes to December.
Rain Bradley from Tomaranui, surviving in Hamilton.
Tēnā rā koutou katoa. Ko whakarongo mai a koutou ki te reo irirangi o Aotearoa ki te country life. Tēnā rā koutou katoa.
Himiona Nuku is 40 years old. He grew up in Murapara in his Ngā Te Manawa, Ngā Te Awa, Tainui, Ngāi Tūhoe and Ngā Puhi. He's running a tourism venture based around the Whirinaki Forest, but he's also helping liberate eels from the Rangitaiki River and Lake Aniwhenua out into the ocean.
Definitely, I remember growing up through the 80s, and you know, back then you could leave your car running, leave your keys in the car, shoot into the shop, do your thing, and your car would be still there. But yeah, times have definitely changed from when I was growing up in Murupara. I always have hope about our place and about our town, and always want the best for our people, hoping young people pick up on what you're doing and become a more positive role model, because we had a lot of positive role models growing up, you know, hard-working men, hunters and fishermen, horsemen. You know, when we were growing up, we wanted to be like them. You know, they were like the cowboys, they were tough.
So lots of hunting and fishing?
Yeah, definitely.
And you still?
Yes.
Good hunting?
Yeah. Good hunting, good fishing. It's been better in the past, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
And one of the things we were going to talk about is tuna, eels. Yeah. Fill me in.
So our iwi, we're quite well known for tuna, numbers of tuna, for the taste. Okay, and for the size of them. But over the last few years, their migration journey has been blocked, I guess, by power stations and hydro dam schemes. So the first one was built back in the 60s, more towards Whakatane, the Matahina Dam. Our one up here was built in the 80s, late 70s into the 80s. Yeah, so since then,
That's Aniwhenua.
Aniwhenua Dam, yes, sorry. So since there's a good 30, 40 years, our eels haven't been able to migrate to finish their journey. So they're like a salmon, eh? They'll go out there, they'll spawn and die, and then their babies come back. So, yeah.
And the babies were blocked from getting up?
The babies are blocked from getting up. The adults are blocked from going down, yeah. So there's different groups and different families along the river all kind of pitching in to make this migration happen.
So what do you do physically? What actually happens?
Oh, it's just a lot of setting nets and a lot of monitoring waterways. You know, going out there and physically finding them, the big migrators.
So you net the adults?
Yep, right.
And then release them?
Release them not over this dam at Aniwhenua, but over Matahina Dam, where their run will be clear.
Right, out to the sea.
We've been doing that for the last 5 years now. A job that nobody was doing, but a job that had to be done. I guess for me it started where me and my brother were out setting hinaki and failing to bring home something to eat or something decent. Yeah, and that kind of got the alarm bells ringing, red flags up, and we just thought we'd do something about it. We didn't ask anybody. We just went out, done the work, worried about the politics later. So now we've turned it into paying work. It's a fully funded project. Us and the eels couldn't be happier.
And in those 5 years, what have you seen? What changes have there been?
I think it's still a little bit early. 5 years is still a bit early to tell any real changes. But in saying that, we do see a lot more alvas, a lot of the young ones coming back, and that's because of the work the rest of the family down the river are doing. If everyone plays their little bit, does their role, hopefully these eels won't go extinct. I think that's the main reason we're doing this. What we want is the next generation to have the same fisheries and the same stock in the rivers as we did when we were kids. Maybe we're not doing it for us, we're doing it for them.
And what did you know about translocating tuna when you started out 5 years ago? Did you just go down there with your net and hope for the best?
Right at the beginning, yeah. We knew some of the kaumātuas were doing it, kind of sporadically. But it was just a matter of just getting in there, putting our nets in the water, seeing what happened, as well as hanging out with the right people to get the right knowledge. it's a whole different process when you're trying to catch a migratory fish opposed to catching something to eat. Mm. And those are the juicy parts you got to come out and learn.
You know. So there are a few tricks to it, aren't there? Harder to catch them to be able to move them as opposed to just snaring them and saying there's dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a trick to it. After all, these are hapu females, so we tend to treat them like pregnant females. But a TLC, you know, translocate them as smoothly as possible. So, yeah.
How long does it take? So if you caught one here in Anawhenua and then released it on the other side of the Matahina Dam, how long is that journey
process?
For them? Yeah.
Oh, it's not long, maybe about 30 kilometres. It's only 25 minutes away. But that is a huge difference when they need to come down in stages and climatise as they come down the river. Yeah, we're knocking off almost 2 weeks off their trip. You know, so there's all of that stuff. They're trying to climatise as they get closer to the salt water. They say, you know, it's an eel going from freshwater to salt water is the equivalent of a human being able to leave Earth and breathe in space. You know, so they're an amazing creature. They've got so much to teach us. We think we know everything about eels, but every year they teach us something new.
What are the latest learnings?
If these eels can't find a way out, they'll go back to their hole and wait for next year. If the conditions are right, and if the passage opens, then they will go.
And
it's like turning the off button on your pregnancy cycle.
Yeah, so they suddenly then not hapu, or
they're still hapu. They just lose the urge to go. Mm.
And so they still do have babies.
They still have babies. Yeah.
But they just haven't migrated to salt water and done process.
They need to go through all that process, salt water, getting up into the warmer waters in the islands. So all of that needs to happen. Probably one of the most mysterious migrations of any creature, because everything's just done in the pitch black of night and underwater.
Mm. And does the same reverse process need to happen when you're catching the little ones to bring them back up here? Do you have to get them acclimatised from salt to this?
They are okay. They've got a lot more time on their side to acclimatise, to get the right pigments, to change colour, to develop their mouth and organs and all of that. So they're not too bad. It's just, again, these dams are stopping them from making their natural migration. Mm.
Late nights, are they?
Late nights, early mornings, yeah. No weekends.
Really?
No, this has to be done every single day. Mm. It's only for 3 months. We're more than happy to do it. I know how important tuna are to my people, to our iwi. And if we lose eels, we lose our identity. Yeah, it's a little bit more than just losing a fish. Mm.
You haven't stayed the whole time in Murupara, have you? Grew up here
in the
80s? Yeah.
Yep. 90s, went to college, went to school, started working. I've kind of moved around the country and ended up in Australia after our sawmill went bust. Yeah, that's right. They got bought out by a company called Carter Holt Harvey. So we all got made redundant in that. I wanted to continue working. I was kind of on a roll. I had bills. So, yeah, I moved over to Australia. My friends were there. My family were there. Moved there on Friday, started work on Monday. And, yeah, just got kind of just over that Australia life.
6 years, did you say you were
there? 6 years I was there. Maybe the fifth year. Me, my brother, and my sister-in-law felt the urge to come home. But we didn't want to come home to do the same old things, like driving forklifts and machines and all of that stuff. And we thought about tourism over there and how we could share some of the stuff that we learned growing up and just share it with people from all over the world. So, yeah, tourism was the idea. Tourism was our kind of plan. And it was funny, too. We had family and friends over there going, "Oh, you guys are crazy. Moving home, there's nothing." Ka poi, we got a plan. And we're going to stick to it. Mm. We got home. My sister-in-law's uncle just started some bush tours up in Tūruwera. And she moved in to be a guide. We became her drivers. Tourism just started pumping. We've done that for like, wow, 10 years. Still going.
So that would have been tough in the past couple of years, relying on tourists.
It was. It was, and it was a bit like a shock. But we're resilient enough. We've dealt with stuff before, and this was no different. We put our heads together straight away, think up plans to keep us in work. What we did know is that our tourism product was very educational, and we knew that it would benefit the young people a lot. And we created this program, Manawa Ora Rangatahi. Initially, it was to keep our heads above water, keep us in work, but it became way more than that. I think it took all of us by surprise how rewarding this mahi is.
And that's, as you say, fitting in with Kohutapu Lodge, with Nadine and their visions as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's been a really bumpy ride, smooth at times. And I think no matter how many times you fall, all that matters is you get back up and continue and carry on. Mm. Yeah.
Emeona Nuku from Murupara.
Now let's head to the Hawke's Bay coast.
It's late autumn down by the beach here at Waimarama. There's a slight breeze blowing and it's a beautiful day. I've come to meet husband and wife team Isaac Beach and Kirby Heath of Kanapu Hempery. Their hemp seed food business mixes traditional Māori knowledge, Mātauranga Māori, with contemporary technology. And there's another strand to their story too. With growing demand for their health food products, they've been getting Māori landowners on board to grow the hemp. But first, a bit of healing needs to be done.
So can you smell that? That's the smell of life being put back into the soil. That's an organic compost that we're applying into this whenua Māori land block.
So what's in the mix?
Oh, everything good. So we've got good amounts of natural forms of KPN as well. So we've got some nitrogen with chicken poo. So yeah, just watch your step. Kei konei mātou ki Waimarama. We're here in Waimarama. It's a sort of a rural community on the east coast of Ngāti Kahungunu, Hawke's Bay. We're situated at a whenua Māori land block, which we lease off Māori landowners here in Waimarama, and for the purpose of production of industrial hemp.
And how did you pinpoint these blocks?
We work with Māori across the wide-spanning tribal boundary of Ngāti Kahungunu, from as far north as Wairua and as far south as Porangahau. So we're really interested in just identifying whānau and hapū who are keen to see some life return to their lands, but also, you know, participate in the economic development opportunity for whānau in the region. So that was really the start. We put a call out, just noticing that there were whānau interested, and then everything developed from there.
And what was their land used in the past for?
Particularly in regions like Waimarama and even Porangahau, you'll find typical conventional systems with a lot of maize. And unfortunately, you know, just monocropping of maize on an annual basis for the last 30 years has led to a significant decline in the health and well-being of soil. So those are the types of systems you'll find, just year in, year out, maize on maize. And it's not really the best, to be honest.
Kanapu Hempery was established in around 2017 over a cup of tea between Isaac and Simon White. And ever since then, I guess the rest is history, but prior to that, Isaac went on a 3-month round-the-world trip to learn everything hemp, basically, from building materials all the way through to food. Coming back to Aotearoa and meeting up with Simon and Lou, we decided that we were both crazy enough to plant hemp for the first season, which we did so. And luckily enough for us, Simon comes with a heck of a lot of know-how when it comes to being a fourth generation farmer. So we planted that out and harvested that, and fast forward to now, and we are planting at least four times what we were planting then, I guess. And we're not looking back, and we've aimed to be fully vertically integrated that entire time, so from farm to finished product. Kanapu Hempiri has a hand in every step, and we don't outsource a thing, so we're really proud to be able to say that we know exactly what paddock and what plot of land our products came from.
That overseas trip nearly 10 years ago got Isaac thinking about the potential of industrial hemp, also known as cannabis sativa.
And I remember being in Colorado, at Denver, Colorado at the time. There was a bill being passed at the local government level for the introduction of cannabis legalization. And at that time, it was only just starting there, and sort of surveyed the land a little bit, went over to Europe and even parts of Asia, other parts of Asia, to sort of understand what the crop was doing. And it looked at that stage, it was, it was presenting to be purposeful and useful in the medicinal cannabis side, so in the pharmaceutical industry, and then also in the food sector, and also in building and composites. So the applications were quite vast, and I thought it was an appropriate technology and mātauranga to bring back to Aotearoa for our use, because at the time there was a huge gap. It wasn't being used.
Were we able to plant it at that time?
Yeah, but just strictly for research purposes. So there was no flexibility on use for medicine or flexibility for use in terms of regulations around food. So at that time, it was right at the beginning. And I guess, one of the incentives also for us getting into it at that early stage.
So fast forward to about 2018, and some new legislation came in.
That's right, yeah. The Food Act changed to enable us as manufacturers to manufacture foods, high-quality nutrition, and sell that fit for human consumption. Mainly focusing on the nutrient available in the seed. You've got 35% of the total makeup of a hemp seed is protein, and it's a really highly digestible protein. You've got things like edistin and albumin, which are present in egg white, for example, so it's a really nutritious seed. And then you've got things like the fat content, which is quite high in hemp seed, is predominantly made up of polyunsaturated fatty acids, so your omega-3s and omega-6s. So it's a really appropriate and logical raw material input for food manufacturing, particularly if you're interested in providing, proteins and fats, healthy fats generated from a plant-derived source.
So tell us about the products that you did first produce.
The first product that we produced here at Kanapu was a hemp seed oil. So an ingredient product that, when included in your daily nutrition, can give you a boost of, as Isaac's previously said, the polyunsaturated fatty acids, your essential amino acids that you can get from one source of food, which is incredible. And when you consume 1 to 2 tablespoons a day, it's been shown to support illnesses such as joint mobility and arthritis. It can reduce inflammation, and there's other content within the oil such as gamma linolenic acid, or GLA, which has been known to support hormone balancing in women, wahine. So that's also an incredible source for us, as well as right down to things like reducing eczema and psoriasis flare-ups from little ones right through to however old you may be.
Let's leave behind the end product for a moment and go back to the growing side of things. We've come up the road to meet one of the owners of the leased whenua land blocks here at Waimarama.
And then I've got my herbs around, tomato, spinach.
And there's a good crop of homegrown nutrition coming along here already.
Basil and parsley and capsicums, chilies and...
Hello, my name's Zinnika Broadman and I live at Waimarama. So this block of land, 11 acres, is shared between two whānau, the Broadmans and the Barnau, which are really just one big whānau.
So do you know the history of the land? What was it used for prior to the maize being grown?
prior to the maze, when my parents, when my mother and them were alive, okay, she was gifted this land by the chiefess of Waimarama, Morihu, Tudor, okay. So she was whangaid by them, and she gave this land for my mother and my grandmother. We had an auntie that used to live in this batch, and this batch was actually built by Chinese who had a market garden here. So, yes, it was all market gardens. I don't know until they moved away, I suppose. Yeah.
So rich soil.
Rich soil, very rich. Basically, the whole of Waimarama has rich soil. But I suppose they stopped growing the veggies and put it into maize and, yeah, and kind of depleted the nutrients and, yeah, the goodness from our soils. As a family, we've decided to take back our kaitiaki tanga status and help improve our lands and maybe benefit from it rather than someone else leasing it and subleasing.
And what do you think about hemp as an idea?
I love it. I love the idea. And we know the potential and the health benefits from hemp. It gives us as a whānau a chance to try something different for ourselves, for our whenua. Okay, next year we should be 3 years into no spray, so we'll be putting in for an organic certificate, which is great, eh? And I just love the idea about it, and I suppose the whole family does too now. So, yeah, they were a bit iffy at first, but we've actually got another two properties out here that have jumped on board. So we've got the one across the river, and then we've got one down on the beachfront as well. Yeah, so and they like the idea too. I suppose, you know, it's not about making a quick dollar or anything, because it doesn't happen, but it's about getting back in touch with our whenua and taking control of it ourselves and trying to make something good happen.
Mm. Yeah, she's working now.
So here comes the truck with the lovely rich compost.
Yes, you can see it's really dark and beautiful actually. You can literally hear Papa Tuanuku, you know, saying thank you.
Smell though, it's quite
pungent. Oh, yeah, it is, but actually, I quite like it.
Yeah, well,
it smells it. Good.
Mm, it smells, you know, good. It doesn't smell fake, it's
real way.
So, yeah. That's the type of biological activity you need in soil, is enough to produce that type of pungent smell, which gives you a clear indication that bacteria are there. And that's what you need. You need life and biology in the soil, biological life in the soil, to break down components and release nutrient to the plant system.
When you first got sight of this land or were sort of looking at developing it, did you take tests? What did you find?
Well, when I first walked this whenua and we were, you know, walking across it, literally the wind was blowing dust off it. It was blowing the soil, the topsoil off. And honestly, I likened myself to how Neil Armstrong felt when he was walking on the moon. It was just flipping dust. It was quite shocking. And, yeah, just gave us the level of motivation I think we need to start adopting practices like this.
Once the chicken poo compost is on, they'll plant a cover crop of 5 to 10 different species to boost the soil even more during the winter period, before the hemp crop goes in. Healing this block of land will take years. Kirby, can you explain the meaning of kanapu?
Oh, this is actually a good question for Isaac. I'll try my best. Kanapu means thunder. And it's actually one of Isaac's middle names. So Isaac's name is Isaac Tui Te Kanapu Brodigan Beach, and the name Te Kanapu was handed down to him by his great-grandfather. Another ironic part of that story is Isaac was actually born in Cyclone Bola, so inheriting the name Thunder in a cyclone is also quite a good story to tell. And Isaac's great-grandfather, his name was Te Kanapu o Tirangi, which is the thunder that descends from the heavens. And I think looking back when Isaac was having a serious think about what we wanted to name our company and to make sure that it meant something moving forward, he came up with the name Kanapu Hempiri, and to us that means the world. A long time ago, the Takitimu Waka stopped off the coast of Waimarama, and a few of my whanaunga popped off and set up camp here in Waimarama, and my ancestors carried on in the waka and went all the way down to the South Island in a small community of Karatane. So that's where I'm from. So whilst I'm a long way from home up here, I also have a small part of me here, which makes it feel very much like home when I'm out here. So the breathing in the gorgeous and glorious sea air and soaking up the community is always a pleasure.
For the land here, access to water, wai, has been problematic. But that's also where mātauranga Māori and organic principles come in.
Access to wai is part of that methodology and part of that thinking in terms of the organic system. You apply it when there's an absolute need, not because you're just trying to bolster the crop or get your extraction levels higher. So we're trying to adapt and adopt a system that is more familiar to Māori, particularly because it's for this particular system we lie adjacent to the Waingongoro taonga, which is a taonga of the people here, and we gauge their level of understanding on when is an appropriate time to utilise that taonga, and we're working with them collaboratively on that on an ongoing basis.
What other types of mātauranga will you be using in this system?
Well, in terms of, it's the question's really a capacity issue. So, what mātauranga have we been taught? What mātauranga do we understand is useful in our current toil? And I think, I grew up with a father who comes, descends from a market gardener from up in Ruatoria, up in Ngāti Porou. So, we were taught all of these types of things when we were young. He taught me how to, establish raised kumara beds and all that kind of stuff when I was little. And I didn't really pay much attention to it back then, but I definitely value those experiences and understanding of knowledge and mātauranga that was passed down, from his grandfather essentially. And those are the types of practices and principles we try to adopt using advanced technologies. And the technologies we have available today are just, simply tools that can be applied, and you have to adapt those tools and those technologies to our traditional practice, and there's a lot that you can garner and get from those types of things. So we try our best to do the best for what our tipuna gave us, using what our tipuna gave us in terms of mātauranga, and using and combining that mātauranga with present technology.
One of the products in particular that Kanapu has been working on is a hemp milk. It's going to be completely grown by us and manufactured at our hempery. And we're really looking forward to be providing a high-value nutrition product in a really convenient form. I think one of the things that we've noticed is that our products currently are ingredients, and so there is a lot more work that you have to do as the consumer to eat the product, but with a convenient product like milk, everybody knows how to use the milk. You can have it in your coffee, tea, Milo, breakfast, and it's a habitual thing. Everybody needs a milk, whether it's plant-based or whether it's dairy, and we're offering a gluten-free, dairy-free option for those that may like it and those that even may need it.
How is the milk made?
That's the best kept secret. So our hemp milk is actually made from one of our ingredient products that we currently have, and the rest you will have to find out when we launch it. At the moment, we are in commercial trial stages, so we're tweaking our recipe because, as everybody knows, when you make a small cake, it's very easy, but when you make a large cake, you need to up the recipe ingredients and tweaking those and making sure you get the right quantity. So we want to make sure that we get this right. So I think sometimes we like to think of ourselves like a good cheese. Good things take time, as Mainland would always say. And, we're really looking forward to bringing Aotearoa and beyond a quality plant-based milk option for high nutrition purposes.
And you have other alternative dairy products also in mind?
At the moment, we're focusing on our hemp milk. What comes from that after that step, we will definitely be keeping everybody in the loop, but we are not too sure yet what that may be, that product. But we're looking into that alternative dairy space. So, yes, keep an eye out.
Kirby Heath of Kanapu Hempery in a seaside paddock at Waimarama in Hawke's Bay. She says they're still in the middle of commercial trials for the hemp milk and are looking to launch later this year. All going well, it could be earlier.
You'll find a video of the story on our webpage and you can subscribe to our podcast there too. Well, that's it for this week. Email us with your feedback or story suggestions to country@rnz.co.nz.
Manawatia a matariki.
Bye now.